You are listening to the Night and Day podcast, featuring the interview archives of Western New York music writer Tom Jennings. Tom has interviewed some of the biggest names in music and entertainment, and now you can enjoy these never-before-heard interviews. Here's your host, Tom Jennings.
Welcome once again to another edition of Night and Day. I am Tom Jennings, your host, and this episode will finish up our Four from Foreigner groupings. I've got two interviews this week with two different lead singers from Foreigner. We've got Kelly Hansen, who is the current lead singer of Foreigner, and an additional interview with Rochester native and original Foreigner lead singer Lou Gramm. If you were go back in the archives, you can find the interview that I did with Lou Gramm that's already posted up there. This is one that was a couple years afterwards, and you know, by this time there was already beginning to be some talk of Lou performing on stage with Foreigner for their 40th anniversary, which did wind up happening. So nice reunion of sorts with Lou Gramm and Mick Jones, who for many years were not really getting along. And I think if you read the Lou Gramm autobiography, you could see there were certainly some hard feelings there, but you know, age mellows us all out, doesn't it? Anyhow, these two lead singers, we'll start out with Kelly Hansen, and Kelly Hansen being the current Foreigner lead singer is actually one of four lead singers in the history of the band. One lasted for about a millisecond. That's Chas West. He was the lead singer in Jason Bonham's group, and he performed, as I said, I believe he only performed for one show when Jason Bonham had talked to Mick Jones into reuniting or recreating Foreigner, however you want to look at it. And eventually Kelly Hansen was brought in. Kelly's voice sounds a lot like Lou Gramm's and probably comparable to, let's say, Arnold's voice and Steve Perry's voice in Journey. But stage presence, totally different. And Kelly is more of a dynamic performer along the lines of a Sammy Hagar and, you know, kind of a big showman type, whereas Lou Gramm was more of a Robert Plant type, somebody who had a certain rock star quality but didn't necessarily have to run around the stage. Again, two different styles. You know, it's a matter of preference of which you like better. I've seen them both perform. I think they're both amazing. I don't really pick sides. I think in some ways it's worked out best for Lou to do some solo stuff and some things that he's wanted to do, and worked out for Mick that he's been able to continue the Foreigner legacy and, you know, introduce a lot of people to Lou Gramm's voice. The other lead singer that I didn't mention was a guy named Johnny Edwards. He appeared on one Foreigner album called Unusual Heat. It was, I guess, the second least commercially popular of all the Foreigner albums behind Mr. Moonlight, which is a Lou Gramm led album. It's an amazing album. I don't know. If you go back and listen to Mr. Moonlight, you just kind of scratch your head and go, why didn't this thing become more popular? It was really a fantastic album. But, you know, Lou suffered that with Shadow King as well. Shadow King was a band that probably deserved more commercial success than they had. But anyhow, we'll start out with Kelly Hansen. We had some local angles on this, so we talked a little bit about Medina, New York, which is close to where I live. And then we'll come back very briefly, and I'll set you up for the Lou Gramm interview. But right now, Kelly Hansen.
Kelly Hansen.
Hello?
Hello, is this Kelly?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Kelly. My name's Tom Jennings from the Niagara Gazette.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm just fine. Here in New York City.
Well, that's always a great city to be in.
Yeah.
All right, you guys don't have a tour date around there, do you?
No, just having some meetings here.
Okay. Well, very cool.
Food.
Yeah. You know, John Lappin, your publicist, is just a great guy to work with. I really appreciate him setting this up like he did.
Oh, good.
And, you know, I'll start out with, this may seem a little unusual, but on occasion my wife's actually impressed with somebody that I'm speaking to that day, and you fell in that category, and she wanted me to relate that she loves the song When It Comes to Love from Can't Slow Down. So I believe you're a co-writer on that. Can you maybe start out with that, talking a little bit about that song?
Well, you know, the whole album process that we did for the Can't Slow Down album, which came out in late 2009, was really a process that started in 08, in the last quarter of 08, and through 09, and we were on tour in America and Europe while we were working on that record, and the core of the writing was really done by Mick Jones, myself, and the co-producer Marty Fredrickson. And so whenever we had a day off on the road, we'd go home. I would either fly to New York with Marty to meet Mick, or Mick would fly to L.A. to meet with Marty and myself, and we would spend all those off days just slamming out ideas, just working on ideas, and we started each song basically from an acoustic guitar or piano that we recorded into what's called Pro Tools, which is this digital recording system, and that became the foundation, the skeleton from which we built all the rest of the arrangement, all the way through to the finishing of the songs. It was a really interesting project. It was really, you know, very toxic, and 2009 almost killed me because it was so tiring because my voice was being used like every day. So, but it was worth it. I was really happy with the whole album came.
Yeah, you know, it's a great album. I know when you played in the show where then I... Oops. Hello?
I lost the call. Just had a bad connection.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just lost a connection to a call to Kelly Hansen.
We appreciate your patience.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know either. Holy mackerel. Okay. Think a big city like that would have a better phone system.
So where were we?
You were just finishing up. You were talking about the process of Can't Slow Down. You're using Pro Tools and doing the acoustic stuff, and I think we wrapped up on that. And then I was talking a little bit about, I know you play a gazillion venues, so I don't necessarily expect you to remember Art Park in Lewiston, New York, but you did play that one song from Can't Slow Down, and I've been looking over some of your set lists to see if you're still performing any of those songs live. Are you going to continue to perform anything from Can't Slow Down on the upcoming tour, or...?
Well, we do sometimes and we don't. It's kind of on and off. The trouble with being in Foreigner is that there's too many great songs, too many well-known hits, and you have to decide what to leave out. So it all depends on the day whether we do a song or not. So try to get in Can't Slow Down sometimes. If we decide to do an acoustic tour, we'd be able to put a few more things in there. So, you know, it's all up for grabs.
And that's kind of a good problem to have, though. With, I mean, Foreigner, you said even, and you've toured with some heavyweights like, you know, Journey, Styx, but man, Foreigner, I mean, you could almost, I mean, the possibilities are endless. I don't even think you guys can really do deep cuts that often, can you?
It's difficult. It's difficult. There's a lot of tunes that I would love to have in the show, but first there's just not enough time, and you have to. That's a consideration, especially if you're playing on a multiple band bill. You know that the time is very tight, and you know. But I think that we've come up with a really great kind of set where we can change a few things here and there, in and out, and just switch it up a little bit. And but yeah, it's a good problem to have for sure.
And you as a performer, I mean, I've had the pleasure of seeing you, and I just am amazed at the amount of energy you have. And it leads me to a couple of quick questions. The first one will be, is really, who did you model your stage presence after? I mean, you know, not the vocal style, because, you know, I think you've talked about that a lot, but just, I mean, just how you, just your presence, because really that's an art form. And I think with this new Tom Cruise movie coming out as well, it kind of, people are starting to look at the front man again as somebody who really runs the show.
Well, I can't say that there's been one person in particular who has influenced me, but it's a lot of thought and study about theater and about how the show works. Like, during the show, I'm singing the song, but I'm also thinking. I'm also thinking about, is the stage balanced as far as, you know, we don't have a bunch of members of the band all on one side of the stage for too long, or I'm staying in one place too long, or I'm focusing on a part of the audience for too long. You're always thinking about where you need to keep to change it up, to keep it going, to keep the energy moving, and to get the audience. That's always my goal, is to really win over the people. And it's a nonstop process on stage of where do I go, what should I say to keep it going in the direction that I want, and to get the reaction that I want, because that's what I feel that real old school entertainment is about. There's a lot of bands that go out there and they just stand there and they sing and they go, I'm just so genius that the beauty and majesty of my voice will just, you know, rock your world and make it worth the $150 you paid. And I'm just not from that school, so.
Yeah, and it's great. And I'm wondering, when you originally auditioned for Foreigner, I believe it was just through an audio audition. So when Mick first saw you as a performer, was he floored? Did he give you any advice, or did he just embrace your style?
I think it was funny because we had like 5 days to rehearse for the first show, and in rehearsals you're not really doing your full thing all the time. And then the last couple of days, I was kind of trying to find where my marks would be, where I would go, what I would do. But then once you get on the live stage, it's a completely different thing, because it's a full-on 100%. I think he was surprised. You know, I would run around the audience and do stuff. So, I think that's one of the things that he really liked about what I was doing.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, Lou Gramm, and even before that, he was in Spooky Tooth. I mean, he's been kind of and Mick's a fairly reserved guy on stage as well. So it was a big change.
Well, I think anytime you're adding the right kind of energy, because there's a lot of energy that's just a bunch of noise. But if you're adding the right kind of energy, it definitely adds to the show, and hopefully that's what I'm adding.
And I've got to ask this. I mean, just the amount of energy that you put into the show. Do you have some? Are you a very health conscious guy? I mean, you know, you've been around the industry enough. I believe you were friends with guys like, or knew, you know, Gary Moore, Kevin Dubrow, who, you know, died young because of excesses or whatever the case may be.
Right. And Gary, I saw Gary just a few months before he died. We played with him at the High Voltage Festival in London.
Are you very health conscious then?
I'm health conscious. Well, I've never done cocaine, if that's what you mean, because I was always worried about my voice, so I've never even done that ever once. And I think what really keeps me going is yes, I try to pay attention somewhat to my health and everything, and the older you get, the harder that is. But I think it's the desire to put on a great show and win the crowd over. That's really what keeps the energy going. It's kind of plus it's kind of a catharsis. It's kind of this great. There's if everybody had a place where they could go and be really uninhibited and get out all of their frustrations and their energy and everything, it would make everybody, I think, much more relaxed. I get a chance to kind of do that.
So, yeah, because I really wasn't looking towards the drugs. I mean, I was just looking at just the amount of energy that you expend as an individual, you know, whether you were working out, whether you were doing, whether there was some kind of regimen involved, because... I mean, let's face it, a lot of guys, you know, they get into their 40s or whatever, and they're spent, you know. They have a hard time really keeping up the level of performance that you've been able to put forth.
Well, the first thing is that you have to remember is that I'm doing, and I've always have done when I was in my previous band, Hurricane and stuff, I'm doing songs that are hard to sing, and they take a lot of air. And I've been singing since I was younger, so I think I probably have a larger lung capacity than the normal person. And that allows you to be able to really do a lot of aerobic kind of stuff on stage, I think. And if I stop for 5 or 6 weeks, it takes me a while to get back up to speed again. So you have to be conscious of that. But really having to sing those songs, fill your lungs up and deliver those songs and still run around, it really creates this really great cardio kind of aerobic thing that you have. Like my resting heart rate sometimes, when I measure it in the morning, it's sometimes like 48. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
Wow, that's incredible. Now you guys are doing a program, and I think you've done it for a while, where you bring in high school choruses to sing I Want to Know What Love Is. And now, is the band itself actually involved in the process, or is that all done on the local level?
That's done on the local level. John handles a lot of that. But what the idea is that either we reach out to a radio station to do a contest, or we'll do some other kind of contest, or we'll reach out to schools directly and have a high school choir come and sing with us on stage, and we'll donate some money to their music program. And what this is about, and we do this with in conjunction with the Grammy Foundation, is about raising awareness about the fact that the first thing that gets removed from school programs when there's budget cuts is usually something like the music program. And the problem with that, I think, is that when a student studies the arts, such as music or drama and literature, they have a whole world opened up to them that's outside of their small bubble. And when you open, I like to say, when you expand your mind, you let in others, you let in tolerance, you let in experience, you let in life. And that makes a more well-rounded person. If we all stay in a little bubble and we never expand ourselves, we never hear an aria or try to play an instrument or read a book that's about another faraway land, then you become afraid and you become kind of centralized in yourself. That's not what we need. We need people to be open and learn and expand their minds. And that's why, to me, music is so important. It's opened up the world for me. And so I really feel strongly about that. So this is about helping out the school and also about raising awareness about that.
Yeah, and that's great, because I'll tell you, the school that's performing with you out here is from a very small rural district that's dealing with all kinds of budgetary problems, and I mean, that money is just going to go a long way. In fact, I'm interviewing the choir director later this week, and they're just absolutely thrilled about the opportunity.
Well, plus, you know, I get to see the looks on these kids. This is probably, for many of them, the first time they've ever been on the stage in front of a large crowd, and get the kind of positive response that they get. Sometimes this is between someone deciding on a career in the arts and not, because sometimes they come on the stage with us and they kind of go, wow, this is something I really like. I really want to do this. And we're thrilled to be a part of that process and to face light up and to get the letters explaining how great an experience it was for these kids.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, it's been 15 minutes, so I don't want to take any more of your time. I'll just kind of close with one follow-up question with regard to the school choir, and that is, what was your first experience performing in front of a stage? What gave you the love of performing? You've said music has changed your life, and when did that happen?
Well, I used to sing with the choir in fourth grade, which was my first experience with singing. I tried to play clarinet, and I was horrible at it. And so I played in this choir, and I remember I got singled out to sing this special part because my voice was so, I guess, high at the time. And we would do these like Indian chants and rain songs and things like that were really, I was a young kid. But when I just happened to be in, I think, my senior year of high school, and a friend of mine had a band. He was older than me. Our families were friends, and he took his guitar everywhere, and we went to the beach one day, and he had his guitar, and we started singing, and he says, why don't you sing this song with me? So I did, and he goes, why don't you come and sing with my band? And a couple months, I was the singer, and this was at a point in time where I was really struggling with trying to decide what I was going to do with my life. And so I kind of really fell into this by accident, but it really became something that I guess I had an affinity for.
Wow, and now you have the opportunity to support kids in school choirs. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, hey, thank you very much, and, you know, again, my thanks to John if you get a chance to chat with him, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks out here in Lewiston, New York. I hope the weather holds out for you like it did last time, and you get a great crowd, which I'm sure you will.
Right on. Thanks, man. Thanks for the support.
Oh, thank you, Kelly. Have a good day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that one. And now the other lead singer, it's hard to even think that there's was another lead singer, but yes, Lou Gramm is really the guy that most people consider to be the lead singer Foreigner. And we'll do a second interview with Lou. Again, just a fantastic guy to talk to. We got some kind of cool little tidbits out of him during this interview. And, you know, I got to spend some time with him as well when he did this performance. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, another interview with Foreigner's Lou Gramm.
Hi, Lou. Always an honor. Thank you so much for, I know it's been a busy day, so I do appreciate you taking the time to chat with me.
My pleasure.
So, just a quick question. We're, I know I definitely want to talk about the 40th anniversary of the first Foreigner album and the 30th anniversary of the first Lou Gramm solo album, but before we get into any of that, any memories of the back of the day playing in the Batavia area? Any venues? I know you were in Buffalo and Rochester a lot with Black Sheep.
Well, I know we played Buffalo quite a bit at a place called McFans, and that was I'm trying to think what part of town that was. Anyways, it was a crazy little club, and we had a lot of fun there. We eventually became the house band there, and we played places in Rochester too. But I'm trying to think where we were in Batavia, and I don't think we ever played any clubs in there. I think it was like maybe high schools or some sort of street dance or something, you know.
Did Black Sheep rehearse in Albion? Which I live in Albion over by Mike Bonafide, and I've heard rumors that Black Sheep used to get together here when Mike was in the band.
Yes, we certainly did. As a matter of fact, we took our promo pictures in front of his barn.
Well, wow, that's very cool. So that's kind of a neat connection to Albion. Have you been back since those days, or
a few times? Yeah, it's different now. You know, I think he built a new house, and I think there's a new barn, and something fell down in a storm. So it's a little different, but I certainly recall the way it used to be.
So, 40th anniversary of the first Foreigner album. I mean, you've been asked a million times about what Foreigner show you're going to show up for. Is that still on the table, or is that kind of up in the air?
Well, it's definitely on the table, but as again, I haven't heard where or when. I just know that I think they've got something in mind already, but they don't want to tell anybody for fear of it. You know, getting out and causing a big ruckus. I think they really want it to be a surprise.
Well, the logical surprise would be Darien Lake, but we'll just speculate instead of knowing exactly what it would be, because at least that would be close to town. But going back to those days, I mean, I remember reading the book, and I've actually interviewed Mick too, and those days in the Atlantic studio. Do you remember by chance what was the very first song you recorded for the Foreigner album?
I think it was Long Way From Home. And I'm not 100% sure, but that's kind of what I think.
And that, I mean, that was that the first song you wrote with Mick Jones as well?
Yes, it was.
I mean, how did that process work when we first worked together? I assume that you had a major hand in the lyrics and the theme, because it was speaking about you're going to New York City from Rochester.
Well, yeah. Usually, Mick would have a cassette tape of guitar riffs, and he would play it for me. And when I heard something that sounded, real catchy and like it could stand up as a song, I would stop him and we'd play that again. Then we'd start working on it from there. Whether that theme that he was playing ended up being the hook, the chorus, you know, or the major theme that you hang your lyrics on for the verse. It was either one or the other, and that kind of was our launching point in terms of making it a song.
So, I mean, 40 years is a long time, but do you ever go back and just listen to that album beginning to end, just for the heck of it, or maybe to prep for a show or anything like that?
I haven't listened to it from beginning to end in quite a while, but I have listened to one of the greatest hits packages that has two or three of the songs from that, and then again two or three from Double Vision and Head Games, and you know, so I definitely get the flavor of it. I certainly love the running order on the first album, and I think it, when you do listen to it from beginning to end, on that last song, it feels like a complete album. You know, you've got the experience.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, from top to bottom, it's an absolutely amazing album. Well, again, I don't want to keep you too long, so if we could fast forward 10 years, because everybody's talking about the 40th anniversary of the first Foreigner album. This is the 30th anniversary of your first solo album. I mean, what was that experience like?
Somebody told me that. I hadn't even realized it, but I think that's pretty cool.
I think it's very cool. It's a great album. There's a couple of, I assume you're still playing a couple solo songs in the set, maybe Ready or Not or Midnight Blue.
Yeah. Those times were interesting because in Foreigner, I was getting a little worried that we were getting a little keyboard heavy, and that a lot of the guitar laden rock riffs were missing from some of those albums, and the ones that were on there were actually kind of pushed out of the way in terms of marketing it as a single. You know, the keyboard heavy songs and the ballads were suddenly taken to the forefront, and I don't mind a ballad being a hit, but after Waiting for a Girl was a hit, you know, the next album, nobody even looked at the rock songs. They went right to I Want to Know What Love Is, and that started to irritate me. Now, I love that song, and I think it's a great single, but I think that there were good rock songs on that album that were completely overlooked.
Hey, was there any difficulty? I mean, that was really the first time that you kind of stepped away from Foreigner. Was there a name recognition issue? I mean, now everybody associates Lou Gramm with Foreigner. Back in those days, the band name sometimes overshadowed the individual performers.
Absolutely. I had talked to some of the guys and let them know that I had enough songs to do my own album, and that it was a desire of mine to do that, you know, and I kind of told them why too, you know, and that it would actually work in our favor because I just didn't want people to think we were all going soft, you know. So I thought if I released a solo album that was more up tempo, it would reflect in a positive way on Foreigner. But the feedback I got was they were worried that the album would be a complete flop and be something that would shine negatively on Foreigner, and they didn't want that at the time. You know, they couldn't take the chance of that happening.
That's weird, but I guess you think about, like, well, I guess a lot of bands, it's sort of the beginning of the end when you see somebody recording solo.
But Mick and his wife went off on a boat trip gradually around the world. They were gone for 6 or 8 weeks. And in those weeks, I got permission from Atlantic Records. I got a budget, and honestly, by the time Mick came back, the album was just about ready to be released.
Yeah, tremendous album. So, from my understanding, and this will be my last question, you've got a new album in the works as well. What's the status on that? I mean, the last album with the Lou Gramm Band was a Christian album. Is this a Christian album as well? Is it more of a rock album, or what can fans expect?
A straight ahead rock album, and we've been working on songs for the last 18 months, and we've got some good ones. We just have to do some listening ourselves and record more songs than we need, and just pick the best ones in the end, you know.
So I know you talked about retiring. Doesn't sound like you're getting there anytime soon. You got a great backing band right now. They play with a lot of energy, and new album on the forefront. Am I taking it to hear that where you haven't heard the last of Lou Gramm?
Well, I'm going to test the waters in terms of, you know, I don't want to put another album out and just have it after a month wither away, you know, like no radio airplay, I know radio's crazy these days, and here 15, 20 years ago, we were getting more airplay than a lot of people, and now the radio situation is they won't touch us. So you know, I'm not going to beat my head against a rock. I will, you know, try and rely on areas that we have. We can have a little control over to get the album played, the computer and hopefully, you know, my friends in the radio business will not have a problem playing a few choice cuts.
Absolutely, and I'm sure you'll be able to sell a bunch of them at live shows as well. But
absolutely.
Hey, listen, thank you so much. You've created a lot of great memories for me and a lot of people. We're really looking forward to seeing you out in Batavia. I'm sure it's going to be a great night, and you know, again, looking forward to it. And give my best to Bob. Tell him thanks so much for putting this together at the last minute.
I sure will. Are you going to be there at the show?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Would not miss it. Very, very excited. So. What am I?
Have Bob.
What's
have
that?
Bob get you some stage passes and come back and say hi, will you?
Absolutely will.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks so much, Lou.
You're very welcome.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, as always, for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate it. Hope you've enjoyed these four Foreigner interviews. First one with Mick Jones. Rare interview with Mick Jones. Really enjoyed that one. Two interviews with Lou Gramm and another with Kelly Hansen. We've got some other Foreigner stuff with Tom Gimbel. We'll probably post at a later date. We've got some other artists that we got to get to. And I guess that's about it. We'll hopefully have some stuff up in the next couple, 3 weeks. If you have any requests and maybe you know that I spoke to a particular artist and you'd like me to post it, just email me at Tom, T-H-O-M, at CaroniaMediaGroup.com. That's C-A-R-O-N-I-A. mediagroup.com, and we look forward to seeing you. Who knows, maybe the next concert that I'm going to. Thanks again.